Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thank you for pressing play.
Yeah, welcome.
Welcome, welcome. And today, we are radiologists, but we're about to be talking to a psychiatrist, a real, real doctor, real mental health.
On the front line.
Expert.
Yes.
Yeah. Asha Patton-Smith here with us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for being here with us. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm
Thank
excited.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so funny that you said you're talking to a real doctor because a lot of people don't even realize that psychiatry is a part of medicine. So that we actually went to medical school.
Yeah.
That is correct. That's correct. Yeah, same thing.
I went to medical school, just so you're aware.
That's so true.
Yeah. We have the same mission in radiology. It's the same thing. It's like we don't, you know, we do the same thing. But take us back to medical school, though. Tell us, when you were in medical school, what was your toughest class or rotation in medical school?
It had to be probably human anatomy first year. I am a great memorizer, but visual spatial things are sometimes really challenging for me. And so for me, and I had anatomy, first of all, you know, just dealing with the cadavers and all of that process. And I felt like
fun times.
I felt like on the test, they were, you know, always it was because the human body is a beautiful thing, but each body is different, right? And, you know, the human body doesn't necessarily read the book. So sometimes it would be like, gosh, on my cadaver, it looked this way, but it's so different on this other cadaver. So I remember I went to Eastern Virginia Medical School.
EVMS, shout out.
Yep, in Norfolk, Virginia. And there were 100 of us in the class, and there were 10 African-Americans in the class. There were 10 of us, and we were a very close group. And we all kind of studied together. And so I just remember being in that cadaver lab for, you know, sometimes hours at a time, being determined that I was going to get completed with that class and pass it.
Yeah.
That was a tough one.
Got the formaldehyde all over you.
Yes.
That's a situation. But it's good that you had, like, you know, some other African-Americans in the class with you that you can, like, bond with and kind of, you know, go through the whole situation with.
Yeah.
I mean, just as, and hopefully, I mean, were there any other upperclassmen who are African Americans in your school as well? Or,
you know, there were, but our class was a class that had a relatively large number considering. So, there were some upperclassmen. I mean, there were quite a few, but we really seemed to have kind of our own little group with like a class within our class, even though we had.
Yeah.
You know, really, the school itself is just a very supportive environment.
That's great to hear. That's so good.
They really, really worked hard to make sure, you know, that everybody is included. And I think for me, it was a little bit different because I chose the school for two reasons. One, I'm from Hampton Roads. So I went to high school in Portsmouth, Virginia.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I was coming back home from Xavier University of Louisiana, which is in New Orleans, which is where I went to college.
Oh, that's so, like that's like African American Doctor University.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. We know all about XU. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's still an amazing, amazing place. So I was there and then I decided to come back home because there was in-state tuition. And so, you know, it was a school that was at that point one of the newer medical schools. Since then there have been a few others, but it was one that really kind of put more of an emphasis on clinical. There wasn't a lot of research at the time. And you know, I said, hey, let me go back home and try this out. So it was really a great and supportive experience because there were a lot of what would be considered non-traditional students, older students, students with families.
Yes.
So it was great. I really don't have anything negative to say overall about that experience.
That's wonderful. And tell us how you got to psychiatry or an interest in psychiatry.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's a great question. So basically, I feel like since I was probably in utero, my mom spoke into me that I was going to be a doctor. I knew nothing. I never thought of any other career. I didn't even know there were other options. I mean, mm-hmm. there are pictures of me at 1 and 2 with doctor's kits. I mean, my mother knew what she was doing. She was going to have a doctor in her family. Wow. So I was going to be a pediatrician. And that was just that. And I was laser focused on that all the way up, through college. Mm-hmm. And that was my plan when I went into medical school. And I then went into the third year and I did mm-hmm. my pediatric rotation. It may have been the second or third of the rotations. And I absolutely hated it.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't do the well baby checks. I just said, this is not for me.
Yeah.
And I panicked because here's someone that since, basically my whole life, I knew what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And I get to the opportunity to really be able to do it. And I had, when I was younger, I had, gone and helped in pediatric offices. I mean, the whole thing. And mm-hmm. I get there and I just say, no, I just can't do it. So.
Wow.
Do you think that had anything to do with your mentors at the time or the attendings at the time? Or you really just, in the practice of it all, you thought, I can't see myself doing this for...
That's a great question. I think it was twofold. I think most of it was me because I was so laser focused and I wasn't open to other alternatives. Mm-hmm. So even if there were some kind of yellow flags in the mentors I was working with, it was something that I probably unconsciously and in some ways consciously ignored. I also think that from a mentorship standpoint, if you have someone that you're mentoring that seems to be so laser focused and kind of a done deal of, this is going to be a future pediatrician, I feel like in many ways, they kind of treat you differently mm-hmm. than they would if you were just considering it as a possible option.
Yeah.
So, and again, this is all hindsight, right?
Yeah. It's always 2020.
It's always.
So I really think that was part of it. There was no one. It was just like, yeah, that's what you're going to do. Great. We'd love to have you. You'll be great. And so there weren't any real conversations about what that looks like as far as a lifestyle, as far as really being a part of it. And there's no perfect anything, right? So it's never a conversation of, these are some things that, are a challenge for me, or this is something, or you're super young, maybe you should look at, other options as well. So I think all of that kind of played into me, getting to this place and realizing I don't think I can do this for a large part of my life.
That makes sense. It's a double-edged sword because I think when you are so focused on becoming a pediatrician, that's kind of the fuel and motivation that you need to get through high school and get through like undergrad and get into med school. So it's good from that standpoint. But then, at some point it is important to kind of open up your, mind about what you can do once you get into medicine, because it's such a huge, field in general. Like even every specialty you can do has multiple subspecialties in it. So, definitely have to.
You have to, I think what I try to do with the students and the people that I mentor now is share that part of my story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For a number of reasons. One, I think that where I am now, which is kind of, I guess, mid-career at this point, there are always kind of things that you kind of look back and not necessarily say regrets, but things maybe you would have considered differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one part of kind of my journey was that I was always so laser focused.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that there were probably other opportunities or other things that I just didn't really, I wasn't aware of because I just knew what I was going to do.
Right.
And so I think sometimes with that, you know, laser focused, which is not necessarily a bad thing, you miss other opportunities to really be able to grow and develop in different ways.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's also why PEAS is a 6-week rotation. You got to go there and actually get some objective information about how, like, it will actually be, you know? So that's exactly. The nice thing about, like, you know, doing the rotations is, like, you know, you can imagine yourself doing it and, you know, seeing yourself doing it before you get there. But, like, once you actually get, it's important to get the objective information, like, you know, kind of realize, you know, this is something I can do, something I can't do. And it's better than, like, being mid-career in something that you don't want to do and then realize, I really didn't want to do this.
Oh, so,
exactly.
And big ups to you for having the courage to actually think outside your path and pick something that
would
make you a happier physician. Yeah.
I mean, no, absolutely. So what happened was, I'm in that rotation. I'm saying, okay, this is not going to work. I talked to one of my mentors who's a pediatrician, just like, hey, this is not going to work. And she was the person that said, okay, well, you know, don't panic. Cause I really was, I mean, this is my whole life, right?
Exactly.
And she was the one that said, okay, you know, you don't have to decide everything right away. Think about it. Let's go through the other rotations and then let's see where we are. And psychiatry was actually my last rotation. I had no interest in being a psychiatrist.
We hear this so often in radiology. We talk to so many docs, they're like, oh, radiology was the last thing I wanted to use in rotation.
Exactly.
And here you go.
So I had no interest, or I didn't think I had any interest. And I said, okay, EVMS is really big on community medicine and primary care. So I said, okay, you know, I can just be a family doctor. It'll be great. I'll have, you know, the impact of, you know, working with patients of all kinds and, you know, running the gamut. So I'll go into primary care in that way and not just specifically with kids. It'll be great. And so I do this rotation, and I remember I had my first kind of one-on-one with a mentor at Norfolk State University. He worked there and taught. And then he also was a community psychiatrist, an African-American older gentleman who's since passed years ago.
What was his name?
And his name was Lucius Catchings.
Lucius Catchings, shout out. Lucius Catchings.
He really was just an amazing community psychiatrist that was very old school and had, you know, just a private practice. And he just sat and talked. He was a psychoanalyst, so he wasn't just doing medication, but he was doing really long-term psychotherapy with patients of all kinds.
Oh, that's cool.
And I found that to be so fascinating, because here's someone that is not getting out of the stethoscope, is not doing any type of procedure. All you're doing is talking and being able to get a lot of information from this connection. And I just said, this is what I want to do.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
And that's, I remember so good. Telling my dad, and he was like, what? He said, I think I want to go to psychiatry. Like, you want to do what?
I forgot to ask, any physicians in your family?
No, I have no physicians in my family. My dad and mom are both PhDs. Dad was in education. My mom started in education and then ended in municipal government.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't have, I don't have any, I still don't have any MDs in my family.
Wow.
And so.
They're probably like, why are you dropping out of med school?
Right. Is this really what you want to do?
Oh, man. Yeah. I had dodged you a pediatrician in the womb.
Exactly.
So you gotta do what?
Exactly. And so I kind of went in with the premise of, wow, what do I really like about medicine? And what kind of made me want to get into medicine in the first place, other than my very early exposure to it with no other options? And
gotcha.
A lot of that was the relationship that you establish with patients. Really, I feel like in mental health especially, you can be able to really establish those relationships in a meaningful way and those connections in a meaningful way and help people become more connected to themselves, which is just a gift in general. And so that's kind of been the premise of what kind of I have tried to not only create within myself, but also help my patients and families create that for themselves as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. I have so much respect for our psychiatrists and our mental health, you know, workforce. And, you know, I think we all know and feel it, the incidence of anxiety and depression in our society. It's just, you know, I guess we're more aware of it, but it,
it's always been there.
It's always been there, but I, you know, I have to feel like it's definitely the incidence has increased. And then with the pandemic and isolation and loneliness, it's just, you know, my hat's off to you. I really am just so impressed with the things that you're doing and the things you'll continue to do within our organization. And so I just think it's great.
Thank you.
Oh, it really is. It really is. And and like, you know, you found your way back into peds basically, you know, through
psychiatry. So it worked out. Again, I didn't know anything about child psychiatry, and I was in my third year of my residency at GW.
Oh yeah, shout out GW.
Yeah. And I wasn't quite sure I wanted to work with adults, and had done just a quick rotation in child and adolescent psychiatry. And I think one of the things that at one point I wanted to be a pediatrician. So I love working with children and adolescents anyway, and young adults as well. But also I felt like a lot of the issues that I worked in therapy with a lot of my adult patients when I was in residency were things that started when they were much younger. A lot of them were, it was in their childhood. And so I felt like there was a part of me that was saying, okay, well, maybe I can make a bigger impact in working with kids much younger to hopefully kind of divert certain paths. That was kind of one part of me.
Yeah.
And the other part of me was that, wow, I mean, what happens to a lot of kids that, you know, become adults, what happens so early on can really change just the flow of life. If we, in many ways, kind of allow it to move in that direction. And so I felt like there was a frustration sometimes with patients that were stuck and didn't really know how to get unstuck. Just trying to figure out how to work with that and understand them from the point where they really are, but having them relate to where they were when they got stuck so that they can begin to move through. And it's very difficult to do. And I felt like, okay, since I do love working with children and adolescents, why don't I do a child fellowship? So I went to Children's National Medical Center, also in Washington, D.C.
Wonderful.
And did my child fellowship. Yeah. So, and that was another amazing experience.
Oh, that's so nice. That's amazing. I mean, you were able to like kind of blaze your own path, you know, just from, you know, learning what you liked and what, you know, you may have not liked, but you're able to find something that really like, you know, caters to like what makes you happy, which is very, very important in medicine. So,
yeah. And I could see how having that longevity or that continuity of care with, you know, with a child or adolescent and to see them prosper as an adult or to overcome. I can't, that's probably so rewarding.
Super fulfilling. Yeah.
Super fulfilling. So that's a great opportunity that you have.
It really is. You know, just in general, I think we as adults don't quite understand how important it is to just try to be there for kids. And you just don't know how you impact them in ways that you don't even know. And kids and teenagers are very intuitive. Because they're, you know, closer to the source, they're younger, they're not, they don't have as many things happen to them that kind of cloud their ability to really intuitively relate. And they also are very insightful. And so they know if you genuinely care just by your energy. You don't even have to say you genuinely care, right? They know.
They can tell.
They can tell. And so I love that part of them. And you know what we try to do is foster and allow that part not to go away,
but
be able to help shape us and balance us and you move forward. And so, you know, just small interactions with kids can make a huge difference, whether you know, whatever field you're in, which is so important.
I watched a video of you, and you talked about a young kid who was in school, and the parents were just racking their brains. Are you being bullied, or is there a problem at school? Like, you know, you're thinking all these things, and it just turns out the kid just didn't want to have the wrong answer if he was called by the teacher. Yep. And I find myself, even with my son, thinking like, are you okay? Was somebody mean to you today? Or, you know, like all these things.
It
makes you take a step back and really think about a child's perspective.
Exactly. And, yes. And, like, that's so true. And the things we don't even think about. I always tell my parents and my caregivers it from the child lens not directly from your lens. Because your lens is different than anybody else's, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Different than your child. Sometimes it's just as simple as, you know, I was just fearful. Or it's just as simple as I didn't want to upset you, or I thought you'd be upset. And we're thinking all these other things from our parent lens that may or may not be their reality.
Right.
Exactly. Well, that's super important. I mean, I think, just learning like the basic psychiatry is basically parenting, you know, like you can't necessarily control what the kids do, but you can control your reaction. You can control what you can do for them. And, you know, they're like inherently, you know, programmed to like want to please their parents. So, you definitely want to just be there for them. Like you said, I mean, they're going to try their best. Like, they're going to try their best.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yeah. And they want to do well. They want to excel. They want to do well. And they want you to be proud of them. I mean, that's innately where they are.
Exactly. No, that's
So I want to ask you, how do you stay motivated when you do have those difficult cases? I mean, I can hear this wonderful energy just coming off. It's like,
yes,
it's just great. But I said, I know she's human. She has to have difficult cases.
Yeah.
Horrible situations. How do you stay up?
That's a great question. And the answer kind of varies, which I think is a positive thing because, you know, what we need in any given time changes, right? I think that I love relationships with people and establishing those relationships. I work really, really hard to try to be as much as possible a non-judgmental, open, blank slate, which is very challenging to be because we all have our own experiences and we all are able to understand those experiences in different ways. And we know that our experiences affect how we react to other people and what triggers we may or may not have and what biases we have, whether they be conscious or unconscious. So I think because of that, I have always been aware of that vulnerability just in myself and anyone else. And so trying to create balance has looked differently in different kind of points in my life. But now yoga has been something that's been very helpful for me.
Yoga, okay.
To relax.
Love it, yeah.
Yes.
It's been just kind of something that has allowed me to consistently try to move to a state of balance, both mental and physical. I exercise a lot. I love to walk. Walking is an amazing exercise. You don't have to run. You don't have to bike. Those are all great. But
yes, walking is exercise. Yes.
Walking is exercise.
In nature. I love it.
In nature. Yeah. Exactly. It's beautiful. And just recently, I've been trying to build my meditative practice as well because that is really helpful in just renewing things. And then I think I understand my role in any dynamic professionally and understand that I can only do what I can do.
There you go.
So when I'm done with the day, I'm done with the day.
Yeah.
I'm not really saying or wondering or what could have been done differently, or I wonder what she's doing right now. I hope she's safe. I have to trust that, okay, you know, I'm done with the day. I've done the best I can today, and everything else will just, the universe will create it in the way it's meant to be created and then start the next day. So I think that has kind of allowed for consistency and an awareness that it's easy to get burned out. It's easily to be overwhelmed. And so each day is a new opportunity. Each moment is a new opportunity to kind of reinvent, rebalance, and, you know, be able to have energy to move forward.
Oh, that's great.
That's
great. You found a way to cleanse. shift the focus, shut it down, leave work at work. Those are all great pearls that you know, we all try.
It's for everyone in life. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So I had a question for you. So I know we mentioned, you know, Xavier in Louisiana. So can you tell us about your high school experience and then how you ended up choosing Xavier?
Okay. So high school. So I went to high school in Portsmouth, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
That's in Hampton Road, 757.
All right.
And I went to a predominantly black high school, IC Norcom High School.
All right.
In Portsmouth, and I came there from a predominantly white environment. I was in Catholic school pretty much my whole life. I came to Portsmouth in sixth grade. Before that, I was in Petersburg. Before that, I was in Hampton. Before that, I was in Bloomington, Indiana, which is where I was born. All of that was related to my dad going through his training and ultimately becoming a PhD. So he trained it at Indiana University in Bloomington, and then he got his first job as a professor at Hampton University in Hampton, and then went to Virginia State University in Petersburg, and then he actually ended up going to William & Mary in Williamsburg, and we moved to Portsmouth. My mother was at that point director of Parks and Recreation for the city.
Okay. Oh, very cool.
So I'm at Norcom High School. So I went from an all-white Catholic environment to this completely all-black school.
That's a change.
It's a huge change. And what was interesting is that the school I was at, Portsmouth Catholic High School at the time, was closing. And so I went there for eighth grade, and that was it, because they didn't have enough kids. They didn't have the attendance, so they closed.
Gotcha.
And so there was no other Catholic high school in my city. So it was having to go through a tunnel and go over to Norfolk or try Norcom.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'll go to Norcom. For me, that was a really interesting experience, because here from one that is black, I am black, I'm African American, and had never been in school with environment where everyone looked like me, and the majority of the teachers looked like me, the majority of the administration looked like me. And this is a public school. I was in private school my whole life. And so now you have people from all walks of life, right? That are coming in, and it was eye-opening for me, because I had been raised in a relatively sheltered environment with people of color. I mean, I have obviously black friends. My family, you know, allowed me to be in a diverse environment for the most part, but was still predominantly black. But socioeconomically, it was middle class, right? And so I go into this environment where people from all different socioeconomic statuses, all different home environments, and I really was like, wow. a lot of people live differently than me. In this, you know, inner city school, you're like, okay, this is really interesting.
What do your parents say about it when you reflect, when you ask them, like, what?
So
you switched it up, mom and dad. What are you thinking?
So what's so interesting is that things have evolved, but at the time, the school, it has a lot of history, and it was kind of a magnet school. And so my mom, who went to, she's from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. She went to, she was all black her whole life, basically, as far as education is concerned. My dad, Frankfort, Kentucky, Catholic school his entire life until college, all white. So I think, you know, what happened was my dad was like, well, that's what she wants to do, I guess. It's easier for us because we don't have to transport her, you know, further. But my mom was gung-ho, like, no, this is the place you need to be. I had an environment like this when I was in high school, and it was the best thing that happened to me. And I really feel like for me, it was great. I mean, it really allowed me to grow and be more comfortable with myself. I don't think I realized, even though I come from a very, I think, very stable and relatively balanced home life that had a lot of black role models. I mean, you know, my mom and dad had amazing friends that did amazing things and have amazing friends since childhood that I still am friends with. But
your father, I was gonna say your father's at two HBCUs, so
exactly. Yeah. But having those Black teachers that I never had a Black teacher ever.
Wow.
And so having Black teachers and Black administrators and just the pride in the school and the history was something that I think shaped me in ways that I didn't realize. So when it was time for me to go to college, I didn't look at anything but HBCUs.
Oh, that's very cool.
Because I want to stay in an environment that is supportive with people that look like me, because that's important to me.
Absolutely.
And that's been a huge place for me to grow.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
And that, shout out, you know, Mom.
I'm telling you. Mom had the vision. And the experience and the vision.
Exactly.
Oh, man. That the way you talk about it, like what I... You know, when I applied to medical schools, that's what I was thinking. I want that experience. I want that. And I think on some level, you know, you just know it's going to inspire you to greatness and to give you that esteem that maybe you feel like you might have been lacking in other situations. Exactly. So that's great.
And for me, I want to go to Spelman. So I was going to go to Spelman. It was gonna be great. I was probably gonna marry someone that went to Morehouse, and it was gonna be the best thing ever, right?
Spellhouse, exactly.
But Spelman wasn't really open to giving a lot of scholarships, and so, you know, there was a bottom line in my house as far as what financially my parents were going to do. And my dad, who I said was in higher education, was like, hey, you know, a friend of mine is a provost at Xavier University. I think you should check it out. So I'd never heard of the school. I'm not really a big heat person. So like, I don't know if I want to go to New Orleans. Like, it's hot there. They have hurricanes. Not my thing. And so my dad said, well, why don't we just go down there and check it out? And I went down there. We went for a visit. This was in my junior year of high school. And I stepped on the campus. And again, everyone's looking like me. So we have that part, HBCU, beautiful. But everyone was interested in medicine.
Factory. Like, that's the factory right there.
Yes. You're right.
It's like, wait a minute, what? Everyone's majoring in biology? This is great. How is this possible? So I didn't seal the deal at that visit, but as they kept sending me stuff and, you know, I kept hearing more about the school and, again, I knew I wanted to go into medicine. I just thought, hey, this would be the right fit. And when I got a scholarship, my dad was like, okay, yeah, no, that's where you're going. Whether you want to or not. And again, another
dad's turn. Exactly.
Another amazing experience that I really think was just pivotal in, you know, shaping me to who I am now.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, man. I know.
That's amazing.
And so now you are a child psychiatrist. Can you speak to some mentors or so in particular, you know, are there any DC child psychiatrists that might have inspired you along your path?
You know, I think where I really kind of got that support was during fellowship. So Dr. Lisa Collins, who's still in the area, shout out to Dr. Collins, who's now at National Institute of Mental Health doing great things, was our kind of assistant residency training director, Black female, killing it. And she, you know, was just the epitome of what I wanted to be. And she worked with, at that point, there was a program there called DC Kids, so it was the foster care kids, and just did amazing job in managing that program. We rotated through there and work with kids, then the foster care system. And I think that for me, I could then see myself in a role of an attending, you know, psychiatrist, see myself as being comfortable as a Black woman and still allowing my Blackness to show and be confident in myself. So I think she was probably one of the major people that still stands out to me as someone that was just so comforted and relaxed in her own skin And she just exuded such excitement and such, just, she has such an amazing magnetic personality that, I mean, she was just great and she still is. And then Dr. Adelaide Robb, who's now the chair at Children's, is probably one of the smartest women that I know. Wow. And, you know, is still someone that was just so cerebral and yet so personable with her patients and so confident in her knowledge base. I think those two, I mean, there are tons of others, but those two are two that really stand out at Children's, who still has an amazing program there. I can't say enough good things about my fellowship experience. And it really kind of helped me hone in on skills that I think I intuitively had, but to be able to hear from other people that were observing me of the skills that I had, but how I needed to kind of work to take it to the next level and build other skills, really was something that you know, it's just helped me even today.
Well, I say you did that. You know, those skills, the patient testimonials are like, it screams all those qualities that you love in those mentors. Mm-hmm. You go through the patient testimonials for you, and they're saying the same things. Compassion.
Exactly.
You know, what's hard, a great advocate for you. You know, like, so that's great. That's great training and mentorship. Again, we said it before with other interviews, great mentorship and someone you can relate to and talk to.
It makes a huge difference.
That's everything, yeah.
The one thing I would say is that I didn't have to really thankfully seek out mentors. I was in programs and I was with people that were always supportive and were, you know, kind of always there if I needed them. Yeah. I think it's important, though, because that's not always the case, right? That doesn't always happen. It doesn't always fall into place. And so, you know, for people that I talk to and younger people, seek out mentors. If there's someone that you see or you've experienced, hey, if you know them, let them know. Hey, you know, I'd love to talk with you. I have this interest. Or, you know, if you find someone on social media, contact them, connect with them. Yes. You never know. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't always, I mean, mentors aren't always just kind of put in front of you or dropped there to say, oh, okay, I'm going to be your mentor. Mm-hmm. You have to establish those relationships. And sometimes you have to look hard to find someone that is moving in a direction that you either want to be at or have some qualities that you want to emulate. And you'd be surprised when you reach out to people how responsive they usually are.
Exactly. Yes. You might have to send a second email. Exactly. You might have to send a second text. They might be busy and they might have seen. It's okay. It's a, you know, just real life. You know, go ahead. Yeah. Put yourself out there.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
That's so true. And I was going to say, I mean, I feel like, you know, you kind of shorted the system as well, because you actually chose places where, like, you felt like you were going to be able to find those mentors, which was, you know, great on your part, you know. So, I mean, that's also important.
That's a great point. And that's the other thing. You know, I think, I mean, there's the right place for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes people look at, okay, well, I want to go to a big name.
Exactly.
Or, you know, I want to, you know, go to a place that sounds impressive. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I mean, you know, you can go to that school in Boston or, you know, any other school that you like, any Ivy League, those, I mean, wherever you want to go and wherever you think you need to go, there's a place for that. But I think for me, the main thought was, okay, I want to get the best practical education because clinically, that's what you fall on, right? I want to be, you know, someone that works clinically. It's fine. Academic medicine is beautiful. It's fine. I just did not see myself in that space. Mm-hmm. And I want to go to the most supportive environment for me, which may not be the big name or the place that sounds super impressive. And so I think it's just important to just keep all of those things in mind, because sometimes those things connect and sometimes they don't. Yeah. And if you're good at what you do, confident in what you do, there's a place for you anywhere.
Exactly.
It doesn't necessarily mean that because you didn't go to a big name school, you can't be great.
That's great.
Not at all. And you'll rise to the top. Yeah. Like if you find the right environment, you'll rise. So
exactly.
I love it. Travis, any more questions? I know you got some questions, Travis.
Oh, I could talk for days, but I don't want to keep the great doctor. You've answered them. You know, the mentorship thing and having the courage. I just hear a bunch of courage. It's a thread of courage that you had throughout your path. And
yes,
I want to encourage all of our listeners who may be thinking of making a change or pursuing medicine or psychiatry, radiology, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hope they've gained something from this talk, and they can aspire to do what for they sure. want to do. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And how can they get in contact with you, Dr. Pat Smith?
So I am not actually on social media, believe it or not. And that can be another conversation for another day.
You'll be coming back to talk to us about
this. Please do. Yes.
I think the short answer to that is that when we're looking at balance, and again, that can be for another day, but when we're looking at balance, I mm-hmm. found that I wasn't able to consistently keep balance
while
being on social media. So yeah. Quite a few years ago now, I just decided to kind of step back. Mm-hmm. So the best way to get in contact with me is through you guys, and you guys have my information and can move.
Exactly.
We got it.
And you can
love it.
And we're on at Reading Room Talk on all social media platforms and on Gmail. Right. So please, if you have any questions for Dr. Ashley Patton Smith, let us know, and we will definitely put you in contact. So
please do. There's just one more thing I want to add that I think is important for everyone. I mean, you know, medicine is a extremely wonderful career, and it's one that is so needed and so appreciated. But I think there is sometimes this thought that you have to be the smartest person, or, you know, you have to be a person that has a lot of money to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. Really what you need is to have your eye on the prize and be disciplined and make sure that you are very clear in what you want to do and what your path is and be determined no matter what to continue to move forward in that path. So, you know, doctors are not always the smartest people in the room, but they are in many ways the most disciplined, because it really is a marathon. It's not that sprint, you know, it's a long process. But just like anything else, you're taking it step by step. So if, you know, I have some kids say, well, you know, I want to be a doctor, but, you know, I added up all I have to do to be all those years, you just take it one day at a time. You know what I mean? You know, you're taking it one step at a time. Mm-hmm. We need more doctors of color
Absolutely. In
every single specialty.
Mm-hmm.
Please consider it as an option, and don't let your own thoughts or anyone else outside of you stand in your way if it's something you're really interested in.
That's I love so it. True. That's so true. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we need them, and they'll be coming. Yes. They're coming. They're coming. I think, I think kids are smart. Like if they decide that they want to do it, they'll find a way to do it. And we just want to make sure that people know that, you know, you can do this. You can definitely do this. You don't have to be perfect to do this. You just have to be disciplined. You have to work hard. It will happen for you.
That's right. Absolutely.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate you taking the time. Absolutely. And we're going to have you back. We didn't even ask you, but we're going to have you back. So.
Please come on back.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you guys for tuning in. And till next time, stay low and keep firing.
Keep firing.